Flexibility is great. That's why there's yoga. Flexibility for your insurance coverage is great too. That's why there's United Healthcare Insurance Plans. Underwritten by Golden Rule Insurance Company, United Healthcare Insurance Plans offer flexible, budget-friendly coverage for medical, vision, dental, and more. One of these plans may be right for you if you're, say, between jobs, coming off your parents' plan, turning a side hustle into a full hustle, or even missed open enrollment. Want more flexibility? Find out more about United Healthcare Insurance Plans at uh1.com.
There's never been a faster or easier way to start your weight loss journey than with PlushCare. PlushCare accepts most insurance plans and gives you online access to board-certified physicians who can prescribe FDA-approved weight loss medications like Wegovy and Zepbound for those who qualify. Take charge of your health and speak with a board-certified physician about a weight loss plan that's right for you. Get started today at PlushCare.com/weightloss. That's PlushCare.com/weightloss. PlushCare.com/weightloss.
Playing.
Are we going live?
Fuck it, we'll do it live.
We'll do it live. Hello, Egg Chasers, and welcome to this, the Egg Chasers Rugby Podcast, the podcast about rugby that doesn't take itself or the game too seriously. We are just here to rabbit on about one of our favourite weekends in the rugby calendar. The Six Nations is back, and let's not waste any time getting into it, other than to remind you that we are on Acast, Apple Podcasts, anywhere else you get an RSS feed. Thank you very much. Tell your mates. We're getting new listeners all the time, especially this time of year, and we really, really appreciate you being with us. That's me, Tim. That is JB.
Hello, Timothy.
In his walking attire today.
No, cycling, mate. Cycling. I'm one of those guys now.
He's a big cyclist.
Big into it. I mean, I've gone through, what have I done? My list of hobbies include CrossFit, Jiu-Jitsu, cycling.
But are you still keeping the plates spinning and just
no,
doing more?
No, God, no.
You go all in with one and then give it up.
Oh, yeah. Like 50 sessions of CrossFit in something like 8 weeks.
Why did you stop?
I got bored of it and then went cycling instead.
Well, you completed it, didn't you?
I completed CrossFit, yeah. I got to Jeremy Cudmore level.
Completed it, mate.
Jeremy Cudmore.
Whoops, Jamie Cudmore.
And Elliot Daly lookalike, stat man Phil Largan over there.
Hello, Tim. How are you doing?
Very well. Did you soak up every minute of Six Nations?
Every single second. A little bit of LV Cup. A little bit of Sevens.
Anglo-Welsh Cup.
Anglo-Welsh, yeah.
I fell asleep a little, so just full disclosure, I have caught up a bit, but I fell asleep for a bit of France v Ireland.
Did you?
Yeah.
Why?
I was just in a hotel bed and just
oh,
just
you had LV Cup all week, didn't you?
Yeah. So I worked in Northampton on Friday night, and then rather... I mean, I could have come back to Manchester and then gone back to Coventry for an early start on Sunday morning, or I could just get myself the 20-mile journey from Northampton to Coventry and stay in a hotel, watch Six Nations all day and just chill
out.
You
even sound a little bit hoarse, Tim.
No, there's no reason for that.
Okay.
No.
Okay.
But yeah, so I did miss a little bit. And JB?
I watched it all, mate. Watched Wales versus Scotland on the train, streamed it. It was absolutely great, peace and quiet. And then I got back, I watched the Ireland game at my brother's house. And then today I raced up the 56 back to Manchester and watched the England game.
Lovely job.
It was okay.
Oh, by the way, your mate Tom Brady says hello.
Oh, Brady, great guy.
Great guy. Got stepped by Rob Miller.
He did, didn't he?
He got turned inside out by Rob Miller.
I saw that, and Rob Miller had a good angle on him, to be fair.
He did. He was in a tough position.
And the fella before should have tackled him. But that's Anglo-Welsh Cup. We'll get on to if we have time, and I probably doubt we will on this occasion. Let's get into the Six Nations then. And all right, I'm going to put this one out there because this seems to be where a lot of people are talking. The big headlines from the weekend are people are talking about Wales.
Yeah.
People are talking about England and some of their players, and people are talking about France's misdemeanor and Johnny Sexton.
Yes.
So
Johnny.
Which one of those big four talking points do you want to start with?
Let's dive into Wales, and I'll tell you why, because it was the most entertaining and probably the most relevant game.
I'm definitely up for that. Yeah,
let's do
it. Yeah, I think you're right. It is the most... I think we learned more from that game than we did from any others.
Yeah. So, probably start with Scotland. This will amaze you. Maybe it might not. But I thought that Scotland were actually not that bad.
What?
I thought they were about 5% off.
So they got into some very good positions. They made some very good breaks and showed some real positive things. The problem was the clinicalness, the finishing, the composure. They repeatedly got into Wales's 22 and were turned over, dropped the ball, knocked on, and came away with nothing.
I mean, things that went completely their way during the Australia game in September, or whenever that was, or November, sorry, just weren't coming off. And that game, it could have been 4-0 for Wales at half-time, but it equally could have been 2-all. I mean, there wasn't that much in it.
And interestingly, the stats also backed that up.
Oh, do they?
Yeah. The clean breaks, defenders beaten, territory, possession, they're all broadly equal. Tackle, the one thing where Scotland really fall behind, or the two things, their line-out wasn't as good.
No, their line-out wasn't as good.
And their overall metres made wasn't as good.
It felt their scrummage was a bit weak as well.
Yeah, both teams lost one scrummage.
Is that all it was?
Yeah, although the percentage-wise, Scotland were worse. But I think you're right. I don't think they were a million miles off, but it was that clinicalness and that composure that they lacked which created that gulf.
Yeah, and I think like as soon as they went behind and they stayed behind, their self-belief went. And then when that happened, like Cornell Dupree, is that how you say his name?
The number 8.
Cornell McPrea.
Right, we've got to stop this now. We've got to stop this. Unless you're going to start calling Dylan Hartley Smith, Dylan Hartley Smith or something like that.
Dylan Gardner Hartley.
Hasn't Dylan Hartley got an English mother?
Dylan Wallington Hartley.
Just to stop you, I'm completely with you broadly speaking, but say on Nathan Hughes, for example, hasn't Dylan Hartley got Yeah, hasn't Dylan Hartley got an English mother? With Ben Teoh.
Ben Teoh, definitely. Hartley's been in the country since he was like 13, yeah, so think that's
very different.
Still speaks like a Kiwi.
I mean,
he does a little bit.
To any Irish fans that might get wound up by Bundy O'Aki or by or Scotland fans be Cornell McPrea, I'm the same with English players that have been naturalised in the same way.
Okay, fair enough. Where was I? Cornell Dupree, yeah, just thought like gave up really. Didn't look interested at all.
I'm really interested that you two have kind of seen it as they weren't that far off, because the way I saw Scotland was there's that old cliche that gets used, you have to earn the right to go wide, and Scotland didn't ever bother to earn the right. They thought they could just chuck it side to side, and I don't know what they were thinking. It just doesn't make any sense.
They did get some change when they were going wide early, particularly early on in the game.
Yeah.
And there were times, not as much in the scrum, but there were times when their forwards were bullied a little bit by...
And that's what I think. I think the fact they had all these front row players out, they were anticipating that they might get bullied up front. I don't think they, again, not certainly not in the scrum, they did in the line out, and they did get bullied a bit up front. But I think they anticipated that, and psychologically they were thinking, and maybe they were set up, and the way Gregor Townsend was talking, and he's a very positive, attacking-minded coach, maybe it was, the way we're going to win is by having a crack. And I just think they just had a crack too early, and the perfect example is Gareth Davis's try. I mean, you're in a test match in February with an open air in Cardiff where you've never won, well, you haven't won in...
A long time.
A long, long time.
More than history.
Like... Yes, play your attacking game, but what are you doing?
Yeah. Interestingly,
that was telegraphed, wasn't it?
One of the commentators said about that, and there might be something in it. He said it came after 2 minutes of open play or something, and he just said that Ali Price looked absolutely shattered and wanted to get rid of the ball. I thought there might be something in that, you know. Just, I've got the ball, must get rid of it, absolutely exhausted.
Well, it was... So, I think it has a bearing on it, because it was a really poor decision from Ali Price. Because Finn Russell was at the bottom of a ruck.
Yeah.
And he passed looking for Finn Russell when Finn Russell wasn't there. It was just forwards, like, dotted around. He should have identified that, not taken the two steps, and just hit a forward on a short line.
That was 0-0 in the first 10 minutes of a test match.
Now,
come on.
I've got to say, me and Ali Price have actually both had the same problem in a game, and our experiences are very similar. I was playing a game in the Isle of Man. It was a friendly against Vagabonds, and... as a joke, I said to the coach, I'll go on and play scrum half. Usually play prop or second row or flanker or whatever it is, right? I was playing scrum half. I was doing all right. But the other part of this gag was that they substituted the fly half for our tight head prop, Connor. Do you remember him?
Yeah.
About 18-something. Good hands.
No, I was going to say, he's got good hands, and I have seen Connor nail a match-winning conversion from the halfway line.
We'll talk about that later.
The opposition were cracking up laughing as this massive, like, 20-stone... tight head prop. Lines up a kick. He nailed it.
Well, we didn't have a kicker, did we? This is when we used to play together. We didn't have a kicker. And the coach calls, corner, corner, in the wind. But of course, because he shouted corner, it sounds a little bit like Connor. It's like, well, our designated kicker is the tight head prop. On comes the tee, nails it from about halfway, to
it
be
was
fair.
Halfway.
Win the game against top of the league. So, yeah, anyway, they bring on Connor. And because I'm looking around for my fly half, didn't know who it was, through the pass, and it was so slow, I got intercepted from scrum half. Can you imagine that? And that's basically what happened to Ali Price.
Yeah. So.
And they didn't learn, though. They didn't learn from that, because they carried on, they doubled down, and I get that that's maybe how Scotland were going to... They were getting some change, but it was really naive. And what you got to remember about that Australia test, there was a lot made of it. And yes, they played well. And yes, it was a big win. That was against 14 men for the majority of the game.
Yeah, it was. And, you know, the other thing which deserted them was the clinicalness of their rucking. And if you look at what Glasgow is based on, which is what Scotland are based on, it is that clinical rucking game, which means they can play from anywhere. And as soon as that goes, everything goes. And the loose passes didn't help. Finn Russell throwing offloads, which he's entitled to do because he's so good at it, just didn't come off today.
Well, I'm going to make a little segue. You said, you know, it was slightly off from Glasgow, and that's the way they play, which is the way Scotland play. Wales had a very Scarlets feel about the way that they played.
Well, Warren Ball lives. And it's great to see.
Warren Ball
is the process of selecting the best... The best system for the players
biggest,
available.
The biggest players available.
Well, if the biggest players are available, he plays a different game. But, you know, fair play to him. I mean, how long has he been in charge of that team?
10 years.
10 years. And just decided one day to reinvent it. Throw on Josh Adams on the wing, first start. Well, it wasn't the first start, but the first start at fly half, I think, for Reece Pratchell. You know, he just basically let the boys play. He took Scarlet's blueprint, what worked, and away you go, boys.
Well, here's a question, and I will say this by likening it to Eddie Jones. Eddie Jones opened up the Six Nations in 2016 with Ford and Farrell. Everybody fit. I don't think he does that. Therefore, I don't think, potentially, if he had everybody fit, that way of playing and that dual playmaker axis may never have been uncovered. It may not have been taken to Australia and done so well, etc. And so what I'm actually saying here is, you say fair play, Gatland, he picked those guys, and yes, fair play, he did select those guys and they did do very well. However, everyone fit? Does Shingler start? He does now. But
Shingler might have actually.
He may have.
No, he wouldn't. No, he wouldn't.
He probably wouldn't have started. No. Everyone fit. Shingler wouldn't have started. No. Patchell wouldn't have started.
Nope.
Josh Adams probably wouldn't if George North was fit.
No, Josh Adams wouldn't have started.
I think Josh Adams would have, actually. I think that's the difference.
If George North's game in the Anglo World Cup, which he was very good, by the way, on Friday night, was a week or 2 weeks ago, I think George North goes in that team.
Well, and also, you know, if Alex Cuthbert's fit, I mean, all bets are off. Maybe.
I don't think George North stops them playing the way that they played.
I tell you who does stop them playing the way that they played. Sam Warburton.
Dan Bigger?
Perhaps. I mean...
Possibly.
Yeah, you're probably right, because Dan Bigger's natural instinct is to play like a natural 10. But isn't it just amazing what opportunity affords people to do? You know, opportunity is equally as important as talent in a lot of cases, and I think this is a perfect example.
Well, do you know what else is a perfect example? Do you remember when Warren Gatland came in and he had this big impact straight away? What did he do in his first test matches? 10 Ospreys.
Yeah. Well, I kind of...
And now there's 10 Scarlets.
Now, I don't like talking about myself, but a couple of weeks ago I said, maybe not even last week, like good international teams have to be predicated around a good club team.
Yeah, you were talking about Eddie Jones, go to Exeter. Exeter.
And by the way, that looked like it worked all right today. I wonder, what Scarlets are doing.
Well, we could do our 10-minute Don Armand chat here if you want. No.
Let's
stay with Wales. We'll get to that.
I think it's a huge amount of credit to both Gatland and you won't believe this, Rob Howley as well. And the reason I say Rob Howley is kind of just the sense to get out of the way. Like in the Lions, he just got out of the way. And that, you know, that actually, in some respects, is quite. I mean, it doesn't show he's a coaching genius, but there is something in that. When you don't know, at least admit you don't know, you'll be in a lot better position for it.
Yeah, I can kind of see. It's like a very backhanded compliment, isn't it?
It's incredibly backhanded.
Yeah.
But, you know, Gatland, in fairness to him, has been there for 10 years. And Eddie Jones has not managed to hold down a job successfully for...
Oh, sorry.
What's that? What's going on here?
You just reminded me of something. So this is your new theme tune for Rob Howley, is that what we're saying?
Yeah. If only...
That was a clean yeah. one.
If only hold the tackle shields and put up the cones rhymed with that song. Fill up the water.
So I'm not trying to not give Gatland or Howley credit because their team was set up to play the way it played yeah. and it executed it brilliantly. I guess what I'm getting at is, and I'm not saying that this is only them, and I'm not trying to take it away, because I think Eddie Jones accidentally stumbled into his best playmaking axis in Ford and Farrell, and I'm not sure that would happen if everyone was fit. I think Gatland may be a happy accident that he had nowhere else to go but where he went, and he wouldn't have gone there had he had everyone available.
Yeah, and this, but isn't that just the story of sport? Oh, I mean, who is playing tonight in their sixth Super Bowl?
Tom Brady, not our mate Tom Brady, the other Tom Brady.
Yeah, the second best Tom Brady.
Second best Tom Brady.
And he only plays because Drew Bledsoe goes down. So.
Well, or Nick Foles, who could win the Super Bowl and Philadelphia Eagles' first ever Super Bowl. By the time you listen to this, you'll know whether he did or didn't. He was the backup, and he was never meant to be starting quarterback.
Amazing, isn't it? Yeah. Absolutely amazing. So, yeah, I guess, yeah, you're right.
So, fair play to Wales. I don't think it's all doom and gloom for Scotland.
Yeah, sorry, just before you move on to Scotland, or back to Scotland... Which of Wales' players who are out would add significantly in that style of play? So Warburton, I say, would not.
The only one I can think of is... Well, no, two. I'll give you two, actually.
All right.
Liam Williams at 15.
Oh, yeah.
He knows a bit about Scarlets as well.
Or on the wing.
Or on the wing.
But yeah.
Halfpenny finished
go
off...
all out, all court play.
Yeah. Halfpenny finished off two tries and kicked impeccably, but he didn't add much... coming into the line going forward.
Do you know, I kind of think he did. I was watching him thinking, like, what a difference a move makes. As in, like, a move to Scarlets for his all-round play. And also, he was just so solid at the back.
Yeah, he's very, very solid, which does allow a bit more flexibility for the wings.
So, Liam Williams and...
The other one is pushing Scott Williams to 12 and JD.
I loved Hadley Park, though.
I've got a lot of time for Hadley Parks.
Push... Williams to the bench then and have JD at 13.
Hadley Park.
That's the one. And
Parker Hadley.
The other one that you missed as well, I think, would be Faletau at 8.
Oh, of course.
Yeah,
Faletau would be tearing up.
Yeah.
By the way, Rob Evans is so good.
It's a good point, actually. Those three players, like, strengthened that Wales team that played so well.
I mean, Tipperick is a guy who's going to come back into the reckoning there. Has to.
Right, I want to make an apology to one particular player. Well, no, I don't think it's an apology. I think it was fair before. He got some stick over the Lions.
Bundyaki, CJ Stander.
For going on the... for getting called up by the Lions, he got a bit of stick from us. But I've got to say, if you're picking a Lions squad today, just on the strength of one performance, Corey Hill is on the plane. He was absolutely outstanding.
He's all right, isn't he?
He did very well.
He was outstanding.
He did well. And that's probably the best game I've seen Alan Wynne-Jones have for about 4 years.
Yeah. So, a good friend of the pod, Brim Williams... often talks about second rows because he's a second row kind of guy. So when the team was announced, some raised eyebrows because I watched the Saracens versus Ospreys game and the annihilation of the Saracens pack by the Ospreys pack.
And you were calling for Bradley Davis.
Yeah, like Bradley Davis is a monster of a man. He's, you know, he's the most scary nightclub bouncer you're ever likely to run into. And then when Corey Hill was picked, you know, the one thing that Brim was mentioning is like, well, he's pretty good at offloading. And well, there you go.
Yeah. The game plan works.
Particularly good. Yeah. Scotland just kind of mentally shat the bed a little bit. Sort of panicked. Rabbits in the headlights when they were under pressure. That mental resilience.
That's the bit that worries me more. Yeah. So I think they've got the skill. if they can create the platform, they'll do things. But it's the getting into the position and not taking points over and over and over again that will be the most worrying thing.
That mental resilience, could that also, linking it back to the club side, Glasgow are a little bit guilty of that, aren't they?
Yes,
when they're on their game, they're incredible and untouchable, but you just rattle them a bit and they can fall to bits.
Yeah, I'd agree with that. Yeah, they just need a little bit more, just need to be a little bit more solid.
Mm. Yes. It'll be interesting to see how Scotland get over that. Because that will be a big knock to their confidence. Because they were going into this game, they've been talked up, they had a very good autumn. And Glasgow have been playing very well in the Pro 14.
Who have they got next?
Good question.
It's Wales, England, Wales. It must be Ireland or France, obviously.
Scotland host France next Sunday.
I think they'll bounce back. They'll be all right. Although, we'll talk about that in a minute.
As we segue between games, let me just say thank you to everyone that joined our ESPN Fantasy League.
Yes, here it comes.
What? Here comes what? Obviously, there'll be prizes and recognition for the people that do the best every week. Do you know we've had like nearly 1,000 people in our league?
Have we?
Yeah.
I've still not signed up. The President's Club will be in the league soon.
Well, you haven't even signed up.
No.
So we've got almost 1,000 people. But there's 100,000 people on planet Earth. So one in every 100 people.
Wow.
On the ESPN Fantasy.
Did we work out how many people were on planet Earth?
Yeah, no, it's a slow build. It's a slow build for they'll need all of the 11 digits of the of the league in of the league ID code to cater for all the many billions of people that are going to
1,000 leagues each is what we need.
Yeah, but we have 1,000 people, and how'd you get on, Phil?
119 or something like that
in our league.
I was about 70th in our league, about 119 points.
That's pretty good. That's really good. So where are you overall?
Come on, Tim.
I don't know. I've not got it in front of me.
Okay, well, I think we should announce who are the top of our league.
Go on.
It's me!
Oh, what do you know? Yes. I didn't see that coming.
Out of 105,000 people, I am top of the Egg Chasers lead. I'm 38th overall.
Well, very good.
Make sure we make the playoffs this year in Fantasy Draft.
Yeah, all right. I'm trying. I'm quite chuffed with that.
That's very good, mate.
Another notable thing, we are top of the League of Leagues as well.
Yes, there we go.
Of course we are.
Highest average score. Although I do think it only counts the first chunk of our fans because our average score is very, very high.
That's what happens when one in every 100 people go to the ESPN site because they're an Egg Chasers fan.
Correct.
Absolutely.
Have that.
Absolutely.
I hope ESPN know what side their bread's buttered on.
Yes. So top of the League of Leagues.
Tim
is top of the top league of the League of Leagues.
Yeah. And we'll have our... so you can ESPN, if you've got a box for Twickenham, the Ireland match.
Yeah, why not? We'll take it, I guess. You're not doing anything.
Well, let's talk about those boys in... Oh, sign up for our... add yourself to our league. We've got... I'll be making sure I pick my my jersey that I'm going to take as my prize for being the best this week.
Oh, which jersey do you fancy, Tim?
The Japan one.
That's already yours, mate.
I'll have it, though.
You want it back?
No, I'm not going to take that. I was going to say Haguares.
Which one would you least want to take in the dungeon?
The one I would least want to take. The Super Rugby jerseys are pretty minging.
Do you know what I was going to say?
It's the Cardiff.
It is the Cardiff one.
Cardiff,
that is the correct answer.
BeatMyBaby.com jersey.
What about the Newport Gwent Dragons signed jersey? I was going to say
that's got Faletau signing that one.
It has, but I tell you why you wouldn't want that one, or you want to keep it. That's not the worst jersey here. It's kind of like owning a Sinclair C5. It's an item which is so terrible. You want to keep it for that novelty value.
Kitsch, yeah.
Yeah.
Yeah. When Dragons are like the best team in Europe in 20 years' time, you can wear that and say, yeah, I had this. I was always a fan. When no one ever turned up to Rodney Parade, I was there.
I was there every week. I even got, I think Pat Palich's signature was on there somewhere as well.
Let's segue so add yourself to our fantasy, ESPN Fantasy League. Join the one in every 100 people that are doing it. And come and win some top prizes with us and see if you can take on Phil, who's doing very well, and me, who is doing extremely
even better.
The code is on our Twitter account, Rugby Podcast. Yeah, so twitter.com/rugbypodcast. Code is right there on our pinned tweet. Mm-hmm. Let's segue to those boys in green then.
Okay, let's do that.
And the clackers of Johnny Sexton.
Well, okay, well, first of all,
he's got a pair of giant clackers, that fella.
He is good. Nearly the ultimate choke, though, wasn't it?
Yeah. So,
I mean, let's not take our eye off the ball here.
So Johnny Sexton deserves an enormous amount of praise, not just for that kick, but for that whole passage of play.
Yeah.
So his restart was exceptional to Hendo, mm-hmm. to tap it down. His crossfield kick to Keith Earls, which was so risky but so well executed
under such pressure.
And then the ultimate drop goal.
41 phases.
Yeah. So that was magnificent. I don't think Johnny Sexton played very well. I think for 78 minutes, his defence was exceptional, but some of his passing and some of his decision-making was not Johnny Sexton-like.
So, yeah, I thought Ireland was so disappointing because there was a sense of arrogance, I think, with that side. I thought they would just roll into Paris, and everyone has kind of forgotten that although France might be one of the lowest teams in terms of caps, it's probably one of the highest teams in terms of salary numbers. So these aren't bad players, and I just think they went in completely, not unprepared, but, well, mentally unprepared. I mean, they knew what they needed to do, but they didn't do it.
I think that's probably fair, yeah. I was really, really disappointed. I've been talking Ireland up as probably the favourites for the tournament going into this
game.
Absolutely
agree.
And they did some things very well.
What did they do well?
Well, they controlled the game for a lot of it, as in territory and possession.
Mm-hmm.
They had more than double what France had. France made 2.5 times as many tackles as Ireland did.
Mm-hmm.
So they had all this territory, they had all this possession, they had all this opportunity. And that's where it ended.
See, that worries me, actually. I don't think those are good stats for Ireland. If you have that much possession, you've got to score.
Yeah, and almost if you combined Scotland and Ireland, do the hard yards and then let the boys play. But they just tried to go up the middle, up through the guts, and didn't ever really throw a punch.
Well, on that, so here's a really, really good stat from comparing the two games. So Wales beat 16 defenders, 18 clean breaks. Scotland beat 19 defenders, 10 clean breaks. Ireland, 15 defenders beaten. How many clean breaks?
2.
Just for the hell of it, none.
0.
What?
Not a single clean break. France were very poor. Apart from Teddy Thomas's try, France were very, very poor.
Going forward, yeah.
France only 2 clean breaks.
And I guess the problem here is the French play in the top 14, the meat grinder. They've had a coach in for 6 weeks. That coach has a panel of 6 other coaches that rotate in to help him. And the Ireland team are almost like a fifth province, a fifth overarching province that has complete control over the other 4 provinces.
Yeah.
And they are one of the ultimate setups in world rugby, and yet they couldn't get the job done. Really worrying.
It is worrying. And I think Schmidt and his team need to take a lot of the responsibility for this, because it appeared to me that Ireland were playing this. So Ireland have got some outstanding strong ball runners, some crash ball runners.
Yes.
Healy, McGrath, Furlong, James Ryan, who had a great test.
He did.
Hendo can carry hard, yeah.
CJ Stander, the two centres, Aki and Henshaw, Stockdale coming off his wing. You've got multiple strong runners. But that seemed to be their game plan, was just that it was almost 1 hour off Murray or Sexton. And if you were going to pick a league in the world not to play that tactic against, it's the top 14.
Exactly. They tried to beat France by playing like Toulon.
Yeah, they did.
And we mentioned this before the podcast. Who is the second Irish playmaker?
Well, it's Murray and Sexton are the two, but they can't both be doing it at the same time.
Yeah. So, yeah, which has made me think, like, in a very simplistic way, is that why Sexton does all his little loop things? Because, of course, he needs to be in lots of places and lots of times in order to get the ball where it needs to go.
But I do think the Sexton loop historically works when those big runners that we mentioned are getting that front foot ball,
yeah,
because the defence is kind of scrambling back and out of position and it creates more time and space for Sexton. That wasn't happening here.
Tell you who I liked a lot for France is Gordon. Is it, if that's how you say his name? The 8.
The number 8.
I thought he's
like an open side for La Rochelle.
He's great, isn't he?
Yeah.
He just works so hard.
He's got a big engine on him. Girardot, talk about engines.
Girardot,
oh, he's a hero,
heroic.
That man.
Yeah. He is, isn't he?
He was magnificent, Girardot.
I wonder how far this French team can go. The worry about France, from a very kind of over... Do you know the phrase that I hate? I'm going to tell you a phrase I hate. A view from 30,000 feet. It's such awful corporate chat. A view from 30,000 feet.
Do people actually say that in your line of work? Well, that sort of
mate. Oh, can I just tell you a quick story? Very, very quickly, right? So I was in an investment meeting the other day. And I say an investment meeting because of my job, I basically sell pensions and investments, right? So people try and sell.
So basically, like, I'm imagining the Matthew McConaughey speech with the Fugazi, Fugazi.
Oh.
It's not, that's basically what was being said.
It wasn't far off that. So we had this guy from a very well-known investment company, and he came in to see us, and he was talking about his economic outlook, and he says, yeah, well, you know, there's probably going to be a slight correction in the market. And then his sales guy, who's next to him, who's a, you know, a rather flash 50-year-old, bald head, big watch, goes, yeah, so what will basically happen is everyone will take the money out of the markets, go on holiday, have a G&T, then ram it all back in. It's like, oh, well, that's brilliant. I'll go and put that in my client report, shall I? Like, who are these clowns that they wheel out to sit, you know, to come and talk to me? So what were we talking about?
30,000 feet.
Yeah, so 30,000 feet view. Why I worry about France a little bit, and tell me if you think I'm absolutely mental here. They don't really have much New Zealand influence in them. So if you look at, obviously, Wales have New Zealand influence and also Ireland have New Zealand influence.
And historically Scotland have as well.
And England have a very strong rugby league influence in them. And a lot of the modern teams do. France neither have rugby league nor New Zealand influence. And I wonder if that's going to affect their attack. I mean, are they going over to the Southern Hemisphere and copying ideas? Or is it just going to be more top 14... strategy
baby steps. It's only the first time they've ever sacked a coach recently, so it's that was a first. That's them moving on.
Yeah,
but equally, I like Scotland are playing with, or trying to. It didn't really work, but they're trying to play with an identity that they've traditionally had. When Scotland had good teams in the 90s and the 80s, they played with this quick ruck in, fast tempo, and England play with a really big, gnarly, horrible pack.
Ugh.
And France, what I think Brunel is trying to do, and you saw glimpses of it, just glimpses, and again with the selection of Jalabert, and it's a shame he and Dupont are both going to be out for a while.
Well, I mean, that's a nasty head knock, isn't it?
Oh God, yeah, we need to get onto that.
Two horrendous head knocks.
It's such a big knock on his head that his posterior cruciate ligament has popped out.
That's a hell of an impact, isn't it?
Yeah. They're trying to go back to that French identity of the offloading game, the flooding support runners through little holes. And if he can get that going, then I don't think you need to look at New Zealand or anyone else, because that's in their DNA.
Hope so.
But if they can, because I didn't see any evidence of that from this game at all. The only positive...
Conditions were a mitigating factor.
And that's fair. For both sides, that's fair. But the only positive from France's, or the two positives, I did think their defence was excellent. Mm-hmm. And they put in some shuddering hits. And if they can get the ball to Teddy Thomas or Virumi Vakatawa in space, then they're as dangerous as anyone.
Well, Vakatawa wasn't so good, but Teddy Thomas was, well, he was Teddy Thomas again. It was great to see.
Just that try. Nothing
rapid.
Else. Just get the ball to him or Vakatawa. Just...
He's quite something.
In space, and that's probably as good a game plan as you can come up with in 6 weeks.
Teddy Thomas, Johnny May will be a nice little matchup.
Yeah, it will be. Well, those two and the two England wingers, because Watson was fairly handy.
Yeah, we'll come on to that in a second. Head injuries, come on.
The interesting matchup is between the authorities and the French medical team and or coaches. Well, like, could potentially be someone struck off here for this, doctors-wise. What's going on? What happened as far as you can see?
I'm trying to think now. Could you get struck off for an infringement, a sporting infringement? The answer is...
Did the Bloodgate doctor get struck off?
Well, that's... No. But the physio did.
Physio did.
Which I think is absolutely... I mean, that is when everyone should hang their head in shame. The most junior person, the lowest paid person in the whole incident is the one that gets struck off.
I can't go into specifics, but I worked for a broadcasting organisation that got a very large fine, and a pretty similar thing happened where the lowest rung of the ladder, who were executing the choices of people much further up, the ones that paid, and
yeah, that's just what happens. Yep. So look, the laws are there, right? And they're stupid laws. They are stupid laws. I know why they're there, but I think rugby union's going to have to bite the bullet and say we're going to have to go full interchanges if we want to get...
Hold on, what's a stupid law?
The...
Head injury assessment?
Yes, because it's so obvious how to get around it. I mean, it's one of those rules, or one of those laws, like you find in everyday life, which is written for the best of intentions, but it's very hard to write good laws. And this is what's happened.
So in the... Yeah, there will be situations where it's hard to prove.
Impossible.
Like, there are people that have probably, almost certainly, I mean, we probably know they have, but let's stop short of saying that, taking advantage of the front row laws. Oh, replacement prop comes on at half-time, goes down with 15 minutes left, and the guy who's had 25 minutes breather comes on for the last 15 minutes, maybe hasn't actually been injured.
So do you remember the season before Northampton went down? They were really struggling in the league.
Oh, they used to change their front row entirely.
Yeah, they did. But one of the games that they had Matt, what was his name? Steve Thompson.
Yeah.
The hooker on the flank. And the hooker went down and they went, oh, you just moved Steve Thompson to hooker. And they went, no, sorry, he's next door, so we don't feel that he's safe, that they're safe to hook. But he is safe to make shuddering collisions.
Yeah. And there was that situation, I don't know if it was earlier this season, where Leicester Tigers seemed to, when there was a, they brought Harry Thacker on, Harry Thacker was brought onto the field as a injury replacement only for the 10-minute period when they were up a man, and then Harry Thacker got injured at the moment when the opposition got back to 15. So you had like a broken, which was useful for Leicester because he's very good as a broken field runner.
Yeah, well, yeah.
I'm not suggesting that was just Harry Thacker got injured.
Injured, yeah. It's just coincidence.
But they're just bad laws. They're badly worked out laws. They haven't thought them through to the nth degree. And France have not... I mean, this is the second time in 12 months... Well, third time, actually, in 12 months that they've done it. Twice in one game, once 12 months ago. So the authorities should be wise to it. They've not changed anything. It's on the authorities, not
on France. So what's the solution then? So what you're basically saying is, of course people are going to do this if the laws allow the loophole.
Yes, 100%.
Like people are going to stow their money offshore
100%.
If they're allowed to.
And I know how to do that if anyone wants to just give me a call. We've got to charge reasonable fees.
the bit that's worrying for me, so the decision wasn't Nigel Owens, so people criticising Nigel Owens are wrong. The decision was taken by an independent doctor, the match day doctor.
Was he independent?
He's supposed to be.
I don't believe that for a second.
He's supposed to act. He's supposed to act independently.
That might be the answer, though. World Rugby have their doctors at matches who make that call, not anything affiliated with the side.
But what if, right? Just what if? And I'm just making up a scenario here. You've already got two doctors. I mean, that should be enough for anyone, And the team have probably got two doctors within the team, so you've got four doctors, say, right? And a guy goes down. Now you've then added the fifth World Rugby doctor. And one of the team doctors says, oh, the player's reporting headaches, and we've got this history of bringing players off for not wanting HIAs or what have you. And then they have a little argument, and then the World Rugby doctor overrides the team doctor, says you can't have an HIA, and it turns out he was concussed earlier in the game or something, It's if a player says, or if they even pretend to have a head injury,
you're absolutely right.
But you can't, so in this situation... It wasn't a case of sending DuPont back on, which would be dangerous.
Mm.
It was a case of it not being... So if it's treated as a head injury assessment, a replacement can go on. So Machinot could go back on as the nine. That's the issue here. That's the issue that Sexton was complaining about. But in the scenario you've just described, it doesn't push DuPont back on. It just means that they don't get a nine.
No. It means that Machinot still comes back on. The scenario that I'm describing is a world rugby doctor overrides the French doctor, who might be doing it for gamesmanship, but what if the guy was concussed earlier on? Or what, you know, doctors don't want to be in a position to overrule other doctors in the same way Nigel Owens doesn't want to be in a situation to overrule another doctor.
Adding doctors.
Yeah.
And you're right. And if all a player needs to do is, if you wanted to get off the field for an HIA, you just on the floor, you get up and tell a doctor, be he independent or be
I've
he your size doctor, I just landed on the floor and I've got blurred vision, I've got a headache.
Yeah.
And you're up.
Yeah, there's lots of ways you could do that, because virtually any tackle could do that.
What's the solution then?
Personally, we could just brush the whole concussion thing under the carpet and move on.
I mean, so my concern here was that so there's been instances in the past where the doctors clearly haven't seen the matchday footage. Thinking back to George North being sent back on, Hibbard and George Smith being sent back on.
Oh, George Smith has been sacked.
He spent a week or two in the Japanese prison.
Yeah, we'll get onto that later.
Wow.
But yeah, so my issue
procedural
is one,
errors.
Well, yeah, and this seemed like it was a procedural error that didn't cause any further harm to anyone because of like players getting sent back on in dangerous situations, but it could do in future. So if it was an independent doctor who has done that, it seems like he's not getting the right footage, he's not getting the right information to allow him to make correct decisions in future.
I think, Phil, and there's only what I think that the team doctors are classed as independent, to act as independent. So they're not who you are saying.
Well, no. It's so whether that doctor comes from France or wherever, he should be acting independently. As in, he shouldn't be lying in order to benefit his team.
Yeah, but you know what?
That doesn't happen.
But jumping into what JB just said, again, I think, and it's made me think a little bit more empathetically from if I was the doctor, even if I had the best of intentions and I'm looking at a bit of footage and going, I can't see a head collision, but the player is telling me that he's got symptoms associated with a concussion, well, I want a head injury assessment.
Yeah. And that,
and then so you're that's individual what, moral core.
I think I know the way around this. So do the TMO is all about questions. So the question is to the doctor, right? So you've done your assessment. You're going off for an HIA. That is allowed. Is this player able to play on in your professional opinion, regardless of the HIA, right? And if the answer is yes, he is able to play on. They
regardless
can go
of the HIA.
Yeah. If the answer is yes, we expect to see him back in 10 minutes unless he fails. I think the doctor would have to say, you know, by his professional code,
okay,
this player is not, this player needs an HIA, but he's also not able to continue.
So I'm pulling you from the game straight away.
Yeah. So I can see that. Yeah.
And then you don't get to replace that player.
Yeah.
Yeah.
Well, because he can't continue anyway, please go for your HIA, but you'll not be replacing that player.
So you get both processes.
Yeah.
Yeah, I could go with that.
Or make him jog off. All right, cool. If you jog off your HIA.
Yeah, yeah.
But I agree. I think what's going to happen is...
HIA is at the top of a ladder or something.
Make him do an assault course to go.
There's going to be just spin around a hockey stick and then run off the tunnel. There's going to be a lot said and a lot written, and I think it's going to be quite tabloidy in its nature. There are nuances to this, I don't see a simple solution, and I don't know what can be done.
Let's just be thankful that it happened against Ireland and their papers are not in any way biased or in any way opinionated. And thank God Ireland won, by the way.
We'll never
hear the end of this.
Yeah.
I mean, there are factions of every media in every nation.
Well, I mean, Wales have got the amazing Wales Online.
Yeah. And it doesn't happen to the same degree in England. And that's not a defence. It's just that's actually a symptom of the national media don't care much.
No more what you say about the Irish media and the English media. They are so far ahead of the Welsh media. It's frightening.
we'll see. Tell us what you think. Is there a solution? This is the issue that World Rugby have got.
Yeah.
How do you navigate your way out of this one?
So I do think that France should probably there should be some sort of sanction. I don't quite know what.
And to who and for what?
Yeah.
Sack a physio.
Because people are going, sack the doctor. But, like, again, really hard.
There needs to be something, because otherwise it's just going to continue.
I think just make interchanges the whole thing.
So it's interesting, because some people, I've seen that, and part of me thinks maybe that's not a bad idea. But then, I've seen interchanges be used as a solution to and an additional cause of injuries. So people suggesting that
bigger, stronger players come on 100%.
Yeah, some people saying it's safer because you have more fresh people on, but other people saying, well, if you've got more fresh people, then there's going to be some people who are fatigued and you have bigger.
Isn't there a saliva test coming down the road
for concussions?
For concussion.
Yeah, they're trying to, but then are you going to? It's really complicated. Potentially a situation with interchanges, not unlimited, but you could have your seven changes and, I don't know, two interchanges, which you can use tactically or you can use them medically, but when they're used up, they're used up.
Yeah.
Well,
and just tough.
Yeah.
If a player goes off with an HIA, you've used your interchanges, tough.
I mean, I guess the problem, again, is then you're incentivising to hide the concussions, aren't you? And you're back to square one.
Oh, it's a minefield. If you've got a solution at Rugby Podcast, this one will rumble on and on and on. Now, let's take a little break before England, Italy, we'll get into that. And
well, hang on. Before you move on to that, how would you sign off for this as a professional broadcaster for this game?
How would I sign off? Well, you see, what would be in my head if I was... I am a professional broadcaster, JB.
Oh, yeah, sorry.
Yeah.
Sorry, a famous one.
If I was a famous professional broadcaster, then I would... I think what you'd have to do if you were a broadcaster is you'd think to, what's the key moment of this game and how can I reflect that in my sign-off? And the key moment in the game, without any doubt, was Johnny Sexton. So I want definitely to make it something about Johnny Sexton, but I don't know what I would do. So I think we should try and see what a famous professional broadcaster does as their sign-off for the BBC coverage of Ireland, France versus Ireland.
Here we go. Hang on. Can anyone hear that?
I couldn't.
Is it even coming through?
It's very quiet.
It's very, very quiet.
I don't know why it's so quiet.
Let me try and get it.
Oh, my God.
It's all right.
No, I'm just thinking of how bad it is.
It'll be worth the
wait. Not about it.
So, hold on. The clip's very quiet, but I'll try and... where is it? Come on. Here we go. Put it as close as I can to the mic.
Go. Play.
But I'm afraid after that match, all we can do is talk about sex. Good night.
Yeah, that happened.
I mean, just happened. You know, thank God the BBC women aren't going through a phase when they're looking for equal pay, because I mean, this doesn't stack up well, does it? So
that was pretty bad. You see, if it was accidental and it was a Freudian slip, I love it. But that was deliberate, right? Clearly deliberate.
Yeah, of course it was. Yeah.
It was picking up on the Salt and Pepper song, Let's Talk About Sex, Baby.
Oh,
do you think
that
it was that?
You meant?
I guess all there is to talk about, let's talk about sex, ton.
Sex,
I feel dirty.
I can't even, can you think of anything better than that?
Anything would have been better than that. Yeah. Just saying.
Good night.
Just go, it comes down to fine margins and Ireland are glad tonight to have Johnny Sexton. I mean, it's not clever, but it's anything.
Literally, good night would have been better. Ireland beat France, good night. It's like the intern wrote that. Do you reckon it's an Anchorman style scenario when she's reading it on the teleprompter, like, what am I saying?
wasn't best. But on commentary and stuff, just jumping back to Wales v Scotland, there was lots of errors made, and it's difficult. And I've made plenty of errors, don't get me wrong.
Who was commentating? I don't even remember now.
Eddie Audi Butler was that was the no, that yeah. was that was France Island.
That was France Island.
And he yeah. He really went for it with his accents. Although I think if Eddie Butler's going to do, we said this before, if Eddie Butler's going to do the French players in a really strong French accent, he needs to do the Irish players in an Irish accent.
Exactly.
It's
right.
only fair.
Yeah.
Otherwise, it's
consistency.
Yeah, absolutely.
He did. Oh, no. Bigger news than that. Bigger news than both those things.
Oh, yeah. What's that?
And I'm not entirely sure if it's true. I'm not entirely sure it's real. But it might be, and I've got my fingers crossed.
I think it's real.
Do you think it's real?
I think it's real.
Do you think it's real?
I don't know where...
I know what JB's talking
I don't know
about.
What's happening.
Stuart Barnes has followed me on Twitter.
I don't think it's real.
I
think it is.
I think it is real.
I think it is real, and I think he just hasn't... JB asked Stuart Barnes, what I'd really love is you to follow me, basically, and he did. Yep. I just don't think Stuart Barnes has done his due diligence and looked down JB's feet.
I was like, yes! Now we're mates. Now he's one of the best commentators ever to live. but yeah, Brian Moore continues to do his best impression of Donald Trump continually. I mean, just the way he talks, the way he views things, his world outlook, it's almost identical, actually. And it comes across in his commentary.
Yeah, Andrew Cotter has got such a lovely voice. I do like listening to him as a commentator.
Yes,
It's just that really soft Edinburgh lilt is just satisfying to listen to.
And Eddie Butler, for his faults and his comedy, I think he's quite self-aware of what he does. And he does give, Nick Mullins does the same thing, a great sense of occasion.
Yes.
Yes, that's fair.
And that's really important, I think.
That's definitely true. He did get a few things wrong. He kept on... multiple times he said... Henshaw carries it in there. It was Bundyaki. Rob Carney carries it in there. Bundyaki again.
Yeah.
There's one time.
Go on, Gervin Dempsey.
So he said. So Bundyaki carries the ball in. He says Rob Carney carrying the ball in hard there, and then 2 seconds later, Rob Carney actually gets the ball, and he just went completely silent for about 10 seconds.
Oh. Well, do you remember towards the end of the magnificent, what's his name? He used to do F1.
Murray Walker.
The magnificent Murray Walker. But some of the things he would say was so, like the yellow Ferraris. Yeah, just completely wrong.
Well, I don't know where I stand on this one. What do you think? So Brian Moore in the Scotland-Wales game, Wales-Scotland game, was clearly sneaking in some phrases that were in a drinking game that's been flying around on Twitter, including Donald Trump's Kefefe, yeah. Which was so lazily crowbarred into a conversation just to get it
because
away.
Because he is lazy. Because he lives off a reputation, right, of being a solicitor. He's never actually practiced.
And
he was a hard man in the time when they were playing doctors and dentists.
Not just a solicitor. Do you know the other? Do you know the other profession he's trained at?
I do actually.
Go on.
Is it hairdresser or something?
No.
Is it close?
Close. He's a nail manicurist.
Yep.
Yeah.
Yep.
I mean, you know, he was
qualified.
He was relevant about 20 years ago. And so were his views 20 years ago.
But what do you think about, like, because again, I don't want to be like a grump. There's a little bit of me going, I know what you're doing there. But I suppose it went over loads of people's heads. The people that did see the drinking game on the internet might have appreciated it. Oh, yeah, I'm being a killjoy, just whatever. As long as it makes sense. And
to be honest, I wouldn't have appreciated it because his job. I mean, maybe say if it's a club game and you know the kind of people that are watching the club games, fine. But in the international game, on the national broadcaster, you need to be a bit more professional because you're bringing in people who have not seen this game before, and you're introducing it to those people. So you've got to do your best. So if you watch, if you listen to, you know, Austin Healey has his critics, but he's a damn good analyst, as is Flatman. You know, the people that do it well, Nick Mullins, again, they tell you exactly what is happening and they introduce you to the game. If you're doing your in-jokes, just don't bother showing up to work.
Oh, I think you two are both being miserable.
I just acknowledged I was being miserable, and it's fine.
It was a quarter of 1 second at one point in the game.
Yeah, as a
nod to something that's a little bit fun.
Do you not remember like he kicked it away again? Just, you know, do your job. Shut up and do your job.
I loved that because I quite like this is one of the tournaments where I think there should be biased commentators because it is so tribal.
Yeah.
So I don't have a problem with Jiffy screaming.
Wide! Outside! Yeah. Numbers!
I have no problem with that. I have no problem with Brian Moore.
To be fair, I don't have a problem with Jiffy either. I think he's a really good commentator. And I love it when he does rugby league as well.
Yeah. So no, I don't have any problem with it.
Before we get on to England v Italy.
Yes.
And Eddie's artillery rolling over the Azzurri. I've got a brief, very quick quiz.
Ooh.
Which is inspired by the fact it's Super Bowl Sunday as we
record
this. So
go. Who are you supporting?
Oh, Patriots.
I
think the Eagles are going to win.
Do you?
Because their pass rush is really good and they've got a really strong running game. I think they're going to ground and pound the Patriots.
Interesting.
Because they've got a similar game to when the Giants beat them twice.
That's a good point. I want Brady to win because I want to see history.
I want to see him with more... needing the second hand for Super Bowl rings.
Yeah, exactly.
And if he wins, he will have more Super Bowl wins, him and Belichick, than any individual franchise other than Pittsburgh Steelers.
Amazing, isn't it? So if you had 6 rings, would you double up and put 2 rings on one finger? Or do you use 2 hands?
I think I'd get like a...
A bracelet?
Cosmetic surgery to add, add another finger.
Maybe use one of the fingers that Jason Pierre-Paul no longer has.
So if Brady wins, who will have more impressive hands?
Jason Pierre-Paul or Tom Brady?
Tom Brady or Cubby Boy.
Oh, nice.
Oh, wow.
Ooh. Still Cubby Boy.
Cubby Boy. Yeah, definitely.
Well, I'm torn because, you remember when we were in Philadelphia and just what a great sporting town it is.
I remember being in the UK.
Oh no, you were
when you two were in Philadelphia.
Watching the Eagles in that Irish pub was such good fun.
It was unbelievably good fun. what I would do to be there tonight. Well, obviously not that much because I haven't gone, but you know, it would be very, very good fun there tonight.
I've got a very quick quiz, rugby quiz, but with an American flavour.
Please, fire away.
In honour of the Super Bowl. So, question number one. Name the former NCAA College Division I American footballer who later won the Heineken Cup playing for an English side.
Oh no, I don't know.
Oh. Huh.
So he played American football in college.
Yeah.
And he later won the European
Dan Lyle.
What were you going to say?
I was going to say TT Lamassetti.
Oh, Dan Lyle.
Dan Lyle. Ooh. Correct.
Screw you, Phil.
1-0 to Phil. To JB. Sorry. Right, so I'll let you both answer.
Okay.
Oh, no, in fact, no, I'll do it. Say your name to buzz in, but you have to give an answer straight away.
Grab that bell. Okay.
The bell. Where's the bell?
Unless you put it between... No, that's not going to work.
No, I just want it to make you feel comfortable.
Okay, fine. all right. So, Chris Wiles, US Eagle International, emerged whilst playing for Nottingham in the Championship. He later went on to win domestic and European titles with Saracens, and he's going to retire at the end of the season. However, he did play for a Premiership club between Nottingham and Saracens. Which Premiership club? You can take it in turns. Take it in turns, in fact. Do it, Phil, have a guess. Go on, JB.
Leicester Tigers.
Incorrect.
Ooh.
London Irish.
Incorrect.
Newcastle.
Incorrect.
Oh!
God,
this is if Wikipedia is correct. This is
Northampton.
Correct.
No,
he played a few games for Northampton Saints in the season before he joined Saracens. So, which former Premiership and current Pro 14 player is the current US Eagles captain?
What's his name?
I know who you're thinking of. I plays
number 8.
Manu Samoa? So Sammy Manoa?
No.
Okay.
He's currently in the Pro 14.
Is it Danny Barrett?
Oh, Pro 14!
He's currently in the Pro 14. What? Previously in the Premiership.
Danny Barrett?
Incorrect.
Blaine Scully. My bell!
I'm giving the point to Phil. 2-1
Phil. Yes, that's a joke.
Blaine Scully with Cardiff.
So I thought it was a top 14.
With Cardiff Blues. Right then. So, George W. Bush and Bill Clinton are two US presidents who both played rugby union. In college/university level, what positions did they play? You don't have to buzz in, just have a guess.
Flanker, George Bush.
You're going for flanker George Bush and
centre George Bush.
Both incorrect. He was a fullback. Bill Clinton.
Hang on. Prop. No, hang on. I was just going to make a gag then, but it's not a funny gag. So
what was your gag?
No, I'm not
going
to bother. Go on. Fly whore. No, winger.
I'm going centre again.
He was a prop.
Oh, I was going to go for prop.
What was the gag going to be? That's, we won't judge you for it.
Nah, I'm not going
to. All right, then. What is the only major tournament the USA Eagles American national side has ever won?
Churchill Cup?
No.
Is it the Olympics?
Correct, Jamie.
Oh, yes.
2-2.
They were reigning champions from 19...
For 100 years?
Yeah, 1908.
Until 2016, you're right. The final question, then, the decisive question, nearest the pin. As of the 25th of December, what was the US Eagles world ranking?
As of when?
The last time it was calculated that I could find, the 25th of December, just gone. So it's nearest the pin, so you can both have a guess. I want you just to... Phil, you write your guess down.
Okay.
On just in your... Just somewhere that says a record of it, and then JB can guess. Just so you don't.
Okay, I've got mine. There it is.
Okay, here we go.
Let me zoom in on that.
14th.
Okay, JB said 14th in the world. So what did you write down for?
I have also written down 14th in the yellow box at the bottom.
Well, it's a draw then, because you're both wrong. It's 17th.
Oh.
There we go.
Ooh, lower than.
Not got a tiebreaker?
I guess that was the tiebreaker.
That was the tiebreaker. I was thinking that was going to be the tiebreaker.
Come on.
All right. I'm trying to think of one.
What about how many caps Chris Wales has got? Or something like that.
Okay. I want you to tell me, first person to tell me, the former club of Manu Samoa.
San Francisco Golden Gates.
Correct.
How does freedom taste, Phil?
Tired of ads interfering with your favorite sports podcasts? Good news. Ad-free listening is available on Amazon Music for all the music plus top podcasts included with your Prime membership. Stay ahead of the game by downloading the Amazon Music app for free or go to amazon.com/sportsadfree. That's amazon.com/sportsadfree to catch up on the latest episodes without the ads.
Want flexibility? Take yoga. Want flexibility with your health insurance? Check out United Healthcare Insurance Plans. Underwritten by Golden Rule Insurance Company, they offer flexible, budget-friendly medical, dental, and vision coverage that may be right for you. More at uh1.com.
From leaders of the free world, then, to leaders of the Northern Hemisphere rugby world, England.
Very disappointing.
Wow.
Because it didn't give you anything to prove downfall 2018.
Oh, it gave me loads of stuff to prove downfall 2018. I mean, this is exactly how I thought it would go. So let's talk about Italy very quickly. Italy, every year, come out of the blocks, semi-firing, good first half. Haven't they improved? Aren't they much better with ball in hand? Yada, yada, yada. And then collapse drastically in the last quarter. Nothing surprising there. As for England, I'll keep this brief and let you guys talk about it. I felt that they looked like they were playing scared and they only ever opened up once they thought the game was in hand. When the substitutes came on, there was nothing really much for them to win and they did well. But it really worried me that they were conceding so easily. The defence looked disorganised for the first half at least. And they looked nervous.
Okay, so I'm just picking up on that. There's an area of concern in wide channels that they were exposed a few times.
Mm-hmm.
Those lofted passes, there was men out wide. So I'll take that one a little bit. But in the contrasting England with what I was talking about with Scotland, I just think it was an absolutely professional job where they steamrolled up the middle and then took the chances when they were there. And like they had no intention of going for a first or second round knockout. It was, if it takes us 9 rounds, but you're going down.
I think just on that point, because there's a couple of I want to address, but just on that point, it's about, I'll tell you the exact time actually, 47 minutes into the game, England got a penalty in front of the sticks and they were only had 3 tries at that point and they took the points, they took the 3. So it was I think it was a professional job and from England, and they didn't get carried away from themselves. Your other points, I think there's definitely some fair ones in there. So England did look poor defensively out wide. The two tries that Italy scored were both very well taken, but Johnny May and Mike Brown, they both got themselves out of position and they came up and in. So it's kind of a Saracens blitz-style defence, like the old Wasps, Sean Edwards-type blitz, where they were the last man, so they blitzed up. But neither of them realised that the winger was miles outside them, and they both had their back completely turned and found themselves out of position, which wasn't great, and that will be exploited by better teams.
Oh, yeah.
On Italy, so that's the worst defeat Italy have had in the first round since 2007.
Is it really?
It is. Italy, so I had a perception in my head that Italy always start strongly, as in their first game they always
do well.
Yeah,
they narrowly lost to France last year.
So it was Wales last year.
Oh, was it Wales? France
it
the year
It was very narrow. It was by 2 points to France the year before.
Yeah, that's right.
They prevented Wales from getting the bonus point last year. And it was only in the last 20 minutes when they ran out of gas, when Wales actually, they were leading until the 50th minute against Wales last year. They did something similar to Ireland the year before. They beat France the year before that. They almost beat Ireland the year before. And it goes on.
Mm.
So this is, Italy always do well at the start. And Italy did well for 50, 60 minutes. But England's strength in depth and Italy's lack of depth came through. And they've got some handy players.
Yeah.
The three I was most impressed with was Negri, the flanker.
Oh, yeah.
The blind side.
Mm-hmm.
Bonny, the outside centre. And Minozzi, the fullback. And they're three that...
Minozzi was class, actually.
They're three that I wasn't really aware of. Because Tommaso Allan, Ghiraldini played well. Dean Budd played pretty well. Obviously, Parise, some of his handling was lovely. But yeah, those three. So... Italy aren't that bad, and certainly aren't that bad. England, did we really learn anything about them?
There's a passage of play in the first half, which I kind of thought summed up England for large parts of this game, and it was a kick chase, regathered, followed by another kick chase. I'm thinking, please don't, this can't be it. And the worrying thing for me, more than anything else, is look, teams can make mistakes and they can get exposed, but as far as I'm concerned, England is supposed to be the best defence in the world. Well, top three defence in the world, if not the best. I mean, that's where they want to be.
Yeah, I'd agree with that. And they were stretched.
Yeah, and that just isn't good enough. Now, when the subs came on, I think Eddie Jones, and this is the thing, this is the problem with Eddie Jones, right? They go into that change room and they're all worried, I think, about what's going to happen next, the bollocking they're going to get.
I don't think anyone's worried.
Oh, I think they are. And then when the subs come on, it's the opposite. It's like, it's time to win it, to win my place back.
Oh, I look at England these days and think, even when it's not going particularly well, or even if they're struggling, you just look there and think, well, Owen Farrell's out there, Chris Robshaw's out there, it's fine.
Or yeah. Exeter Chiefs are out there.
So, well, there's a few Exeter Chiefs, Chiefs who played very, very well. Just on that point about Eddie Jones, so I thought he managed... The one I'd probably highlight most is Jonathan Joseph.
Yeah.
Who, this was almost like, JJ, you're dropped to an extent. And when he came back in, it was like someone stuck a rocket up his backside. He was brilliant. He was everywhere.
Yeah, as good as Jonathan Joseph has looked for about 6 months, I'd say.
Yeah, I'd agree with that. Which I'd actually say is evidence of a positive Eddie Jones contribution.
Mm.
But on the Exeter Chiefs, so there were four playing in the game. Sam Simmons, he didn't get the official man of the match. He definitely would have got my man of the match.
If he'd have scored his try 90 seconds earlier, I'm sure it would have changed to him.
I thought he was brilliant. Even taking those two tries out of the equation and the assist that he got
A lot of work in defence.
His work rate was brilliant.
He's kind of like... his work rate's amazing. He doesn't quite hit as hard as Sam Underhill. I think those two as a pair are going to be an absolute nightmare for the future.
Yeah.
What I
will say is, it's great. So his work rate is amazing. As a number eight, he looked exceptional when there's a weak Tyrone defence in front of him.
Mm.
Against Wales, it will be a totally, totally different ball game. Against Ireland, against France, it will just be so different.
I think he's going to need a bit of help.
If he looks that good playing against those guys, then he's a serious player.
But a last 20-minute finishing kind of guy to come off when everyone's fit, that's how you deploy him.
That would be exceptional as well. Or, I mean, he's the kind of guy who could play 80 minutes at seven.
Do you know who could help lift the load from him a little bit in the back row?
Well, it was interesting to hear Ben Kay in commentary saying it's great to see that that's how Ben Kay, let me quote him almost verbatim, I can't remember exactly what he said, but after Simmons scored his second try, he said, yeah, it's fantastic, you know, this is how you earn international honours, you play well for your club, and he's transferring that form into the international arena, and it's great to see. So let me guess, Don Armand,
exactly. Yeah. Hey, I tell you what, against a big physical Welsh pack, you know, you're not going to get the rub of the green like Sam Simmons did towards the end.
No,
and you're going to need that help. You're going to need that big body. Having said that,
Chris Robshaw is an absolute hero. His resurgence. I think it's amazing to see even people that really, really were, because he was the focal point for a lot of.
I don't think anyone's
after the World Cup,
and I was included there. I mean, yeah. I thought he had a bad World Cup.
He did.
I tell you what, though, there was a time today when he came off and Underhill came on. I thought, this feels a little bit of changing of the guardy.
I'm not sure we're quite there yet.
It's not. I think it's around the corner, Hill.
Nah.
But also, just think about this, right? Think about it. You've been toiling and you've kind of got the upper hand over your opposite man over, say, 60 minutes, and you've been carrying, and you're just getting a little bit sluggish now. The power's going from your legs. And all of a sudden, Sam Underhill comes on.
And smashes you.
I just thought, those poor lads.
I know. Because Italy, they have got some outstanding players that we mentioned. They don't have the depth in the first team. And they certainly don't have the depth off the bench.
Yeah, I would have Sam Underhill. Exclusively as a bench player, just to shake things up towards the end, for his own safety as much as anyone else's.
Mm. Well, the Eddie Jones has got some ridiculous options, absolutely ridiculous.
Well, there's one position where he doesn't have many options.
Oh yeah, yeah, but you know, but I mean, with such a key position like scrum half,
Eddie Jones, attack coach.
Yeah, with such a key position like scrum half, Eddie Jones wouldn't leave himself exposed. He would have made sure that he had three players that were rotating him regularly in a squad. Oh, no. He's just stuck with two forever.
Was it Willie Hines that was the scrum half?
Jack Maunder was the last one.
So Jack Maunder was the last one to play in a squad.
Yeah.
Because I've been looking back through this, but Jack Maunder hasn't started a game. Do you know who the last scrum half, or the last two scrum halves to start games for England were?
Wigglesworth?
That weren't Kerr or Youngs.
Yeah.
So Wigglesworth must be one.
Wigglesworth was one of them, which was summer 2015.
Try, so we're so far back now, it's probably like Harry Ellis.
Summer 2015?
Summer 2015.
Okay, so...
And the other one, summer 2015.
Summer 2015, I will go...
Simpson,
I was going to guess.
Nope.
Dawson.
Hold on.
Dawson. Keep guessing. Get your guesses out there, because it's going to take a while.
Wow.
Oh, hang on.
Is he still playing?
He is still playing, not Premiership level.
Oh.
Wow. Dixon.
Lee Dixon.
Carl Dixon's the ref, isn't he?
He's playing at Bedford. No, he's playing at Bedford.
Bedford.
Yeah.
Mm. Oh, was that
so
when...
That's how far you have to go back to get a scrum half, not Youngs or Kerr.
Which you've got to say is an oversight, because they've had games, tours to Argentina, for example.
Yeah.
Where that would have been the perfect place.
Yeah,
I just don't understand.
I don't understand it. Yeah,
I don't understand this aspect. Mind you, I'm saying that, and I guess Gatland is the same. Which is, if he had the guys available to him, he does play those guys. So it's not just an Eddie Jones problem, is it? It's if your first teamers are available, do you play your first teamers? And Warren Gatland would have done the same. I think Schmidt would have done the same. Everyone would have done the same.
So I can't help feel that it is an oversight that he took. So he took Maunder to Argentina, and Maunder has got certainly less than 80 minutes at Premiership Rugby this season, because Chudley and Nick White
and Townsend
are far ahead of him. Well, Townsend, Maunder, yeah, they're kind of 1A, 1B.
Because all the journalists were saying take Robson, he went, I'll show you. Jack Maunder, come on.
So it'll be very interesting to see who gets called up, because Wigglesworth and Hines and Chudley and Maunder and Townsend have all been involved in his squads. I don't think that Dan Robson's ever been involved in an Eddie Jones squad.
Wow.
I just don't understand how he gets to the conclusion he gets to about these players. I just don't get it.
I do for most of the players, but there's a few that I'm just like...
Well, like, who? Who would we massively disagree on? So, yeah, I don't know if I mentioned, I like Don Armand. Robson's a good player. Who do you think he's got it nailed on with?
Well, I think most of his team is nailed on. Like, I don't have many disagreements with his team. So the 23 that was out there.
Yeah, I guess I guess the only omissions are Armand.
Yeah.
And a scrum half, really.
Yeah.
So it's those two key positions which you can't like play a centre on the wing or a winger on at fullback when it comes to hooker and scrum half.
Yeah. Which does make it. Yeah.
And they're the two positions where he has two options and two options only.
Yeah. Significant lack of depth.
So it'll be very interesting to see who gets the call. Like, again, this will come out in Monday morning, who's been called up, but who would you guess? I mean, everyone's going to assume it would be Dan Robson.
Mm. Yeah, but he's...
Oh, sorry.
The fact he's not been involved in any of the Eddie Jones squads.
It's going to be... tell you what, it's going to be someone like... His name's going to be Ian... Ian Williams, and he currently plays college rugby.
Harry Simmons had a good game for Leicester in the Anglo-Welsh Cup.
Yeah, it's going to be ridiculous, yeah, isn't it?
He scored two tries, didn't he?
He's in some technical college up in Newcastle, but he's playing really well. That's who it will be.
He's got a father that has 50 caps for Scotland.
Yeah. Who?
Do you reckon he might go Wigglesworth? Or Wigglesworth or Robson would be the obvious choices.
Yeah.
Or he could go for Ben Spencer. Ben Spencer's been involved in the squad.
Yeah, Ben Spencer's a possibility, but Ben Spencer has always flattered to deceive, I think. I don't think he's ever really fulfilled his potential at Saracens. Yes.
No, you're right there.
Eddie Jones, if you're listening, don't pick Dan Robson. Whatever you do, don't pick Don Armand. Don't pick Dan Robson.
Gareth Crabtree. That's a guy.
England's new scrum half, Gareth Crabtree. There we go, sorted.
Any other points from this game?
Nah. I do want to revise just generally, though. I'm not sure France is my favourite kit. From a distance, yes. But when you go close up, there's that really tight pattern on it that I didn't notice before.
Disgusting, isn't it?
It's really horrible.
I don't mind that.
It bothers me. I think Italy is my favourite kit now.
I do like that Italy kit, actually.
I like the gold trim. I like it. I love the socks.
Do you know why Italy play in blue? Bearing in mind their flag is red, white and green.
I do know this, actually.
It's the same reason why... Dutch international sides play orange, and the same reason why German sides play in black and white, which again German flag is red, black and yellow.
So hang on, Willie Mott says it. I know the answer to this, annoyingly. Go on.
It's to do with the royal colours of those countries.
Like William of Orange and
yes. So
okay.
Yeah, I don't know if the orange is slightly different. It's not the royal, but it's all to do with the royal houses and what their colour is.
There you go.
So that's why they're playing blue. But I think Italy's my favourite kit in the Six Nations, taken over from France, having seen the close up detail.
Do you know what I think? Italy followed by Wales.
I think I'm with you there, Jay.
Mm.
I'm with you. I reckon the last thing we do, very quickly, Team of the Week. This is something we should do through the Six Nations.
Hang on, how about domestic news and predictions?
Oh, God, yeah. How long have we been going? We better rattle through.
Only one hour 16.
Well, should we do a domestic podcast tomorrow? To have a little breather for now?
You can do if you want.
Yeah, just a short one.
Oh, hang on. Sorry, I've got John Wilkin and Mark Flanagan, Salford City Reds captain, coming in tomorrow to do a Rugby League podcast here, so it's booked up, mate.
Oh, that's all right.
But I don't like to brag, so...
I'm delighted about that. That means I don't have to pay NAS council tax rates exclusively.
Have you not got
it's only a one-off, unfortunately.
Not got Malcolm Alka coming in?
No, he's detained at Her Majesty's pleasure.
Hey, I'm confused. What?
Malcolm Alka, right? So when I first came up to Manchester, I didn't watch Shell Shock. I used to watch Salford City Reds, not every week, but a lot of weeks down in the Willows. It was amazing. And the captain at the time then was a guy called Malcolm Alka. Malcolm Alka, Malcolm Alka. That is an official song. I just and, you know, we used to talk about Malcolm Alka all the time. Anyway, it popped up in the news the other day because he robbed a Domino's pizza with a machete and then nipped over to, I think, a news agent and repeated the trick.
Wow.
Yeah. Lives in some kind of little town outside of Wigan, yeah. which is itself a little town.
It was a KFC and a Tesco with a machete.
Wow, what a guy.
Wow. 4 years in prison.
Yeah, he also went missing from Salford training for undisclosed reasons. They couldn't find him for a couple of months. But he was captain. Tells you everything you need to know about Salford City Reds.
Wow. Well, yeah, I'll tell you, this has been exclusively Six Nations. Let's not muddy the water there. Final thing before we sign off with this one. We'll do a quick domestic podcast for tomorrow, and then we'll do a preview podcast Wednesday or it'll probably come out Thursday morning. We'll squeeze it in sometime. So, team of the week. So, I'll tell you what, I'll go through and correct me if you think I'm wrong. Fullback, Lee Halfpenny.
Yes.
Yes.
With an honourable mention to Minozzi, the Italian fellow.
Yeah. Wingers, Anthony Watson and Steph Evans.
Yes.
Ooh, maybe Teddy Thoma. Just for the try.
So, Watson and Teddy Thoma.
Yeah, but the Steph Evans dive is pretty cool.
Yeah, and Steph Evans was very good throughout most of the game, whereas yeah. Teddy Thoma just did one thing.
Centres, I forget the French outside centre was one that I liked and I Chevron made a note of, and Parks, but there wasn't really anyone that I thought centre was
Parks
amazing.
Ace,
Parks was really good.
So Farrell was brilliant.
Farrell and Parks.
And Boney, the Italian outside centre.
Yes. Patchell, 10.
Definitely.
Yeah.
Davis, 9?
Yes, yeah. 100%.
Yeah.
Front row of Mako, Guillaume Girardo.
No.
100, he's got to be. That
Guillaume Girardo, yeah. French Mako, was Mako awesome. No.
Mako did loads of work.
Rob Evans, mate. That boy is a star.
I could go with that.
All right, we'll go with Rob Evans. And the tight head prop?
Whoever.
Yeah,
one,
whoever.
One of them?
One of them. one of them.
How about Cow Masker expert?
James Batty.
James Batty.
Whatever, yeah. second row of James Ryan and Corey Hill.
Alan Wynn.
Alan Wynn.
Alan
yeah.
Wynn. Alan Wynn and Corey Hill.
Yeah, or Hendo. Hendo.
No, not Hendo.
Hendo.
That's insane.
Okay.
Insane.
We can argue that one. And then a back row of Sam Simmons at 8.
Definitely.
And then Shingler and Navidi. Robshaw might be pushing.
Shingler, Simmons and Negri.
Do you know what?
Go on then, we'll go with that.
Do you know there's films which the title is made before the film? Face Off, that sort of thing.
Oh, yeah, yeah.
Well, next week I'm going to come back with a feature for a game next week called Shingler's List. I'm not sure. In fact, if you've got any suggestions about how we play Shingler's List, please just
That's what,
on we Twitter, should, hashtag Shingler's List.
We should do that. We should come up with a name first and then
the game.
Invent the game afterwards.
Yeah, maybe Shingler's List. Yeah, give us names for games and we'll do... Yeah, because in Talk H, we...
Ding.
Do you remember when the iguanas had to run through the snakes?
Oh, yeah, on Planet.
Yeah, Planet Earth. Earth, whatever it was, right? So our director of rugby saw that and was like, oh, we need to invent a game called Snakes and Iguanas. So we had to sit down for half an hour and make up a game called Snakes and Iguanas. So that's what we're going to do. If you can think of some rules for Shingler's List, hang on. Yes.
Shingler's.
Shingler's List.
List.
Or you've got a better game that we can play. Hashtag Shingler's List. Let us know.
All right.
Perfect.
Fantastic. Right. So hit subscribe and you'll get the next episode, which will be a domestic focused, quick bulletin podcast with all the news and other stuff that's been going on, because we've just been going on about the Six Nations for ages. In the meantime, yeah, hit subscribe and let the boys play.
Let the boys play.
Tired of ads interfering with your favorite sports podcasts? Good news. Ad-free listening is available on Amazon Music for all the music plus top podcasts included with your Prime membership. Stay ahead of the game by downloading the Amazon Music app for free or go to amazon.com/sportsadfree. That's amazon.com/sportsadfree to catch up on the latest episodes without the ads.